Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Author Jane Ann Phillips is here to tell us about her latest novel, Night Watch, the story of a mother and daughter seeking the refuge in the chaotic aftermath of the Civil War at the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. Phillips is considered one of the most accomplished novelists of our time. She joins us this morning to discuss the novel's themes of war, prejudice, and endurance, as well as writing on mental health and trauma. Jane Ann Phillips is the author of Black Tickets, Machine Dreams, Fast Lanes, Shelter, Motherkind, Lark and Termite, and Quiet Dell. She is the recipient of a Guggenheim Fellowship and a National Book Award finalist. The latest is Night Watch, and it is a great pleasure and honor to welcome Jane Ann Phillips to the Roundtable. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Love having you here. Thank you very much for being with us. I think the last time I saw you is when you were at the New York State Writers Institute, whose director will be here shortly. So that is, it all comes full circle, and it's wonderful to have you back, at least your voice, in the region. Give us a sense of how this particular novel came about.
My hometown was 20 minutes from the Weston State Hospital, which was the original Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. It is an amazing place. 10 miles inside, runs a quarter of a mile, sort of the buildings themselves along, sort of down the road. It was part of the Thomas Story Kirkbride system of big state institutions. Every state was meant to have an institution to take care of its poor. And I think, too, that I've always been fascinated by war. I mean, I think that I consider this a part of a trilogy with Machine Dreams, which was about Vietnam, and Lark and Termite, which was based on an incident in the Korean War. There is a combat scene, but I see my war novels as being about the individual, the family, what they have to endure because a war is happening. And, of course, the Civil War is the only war that's taken place really here on our land.
Right.
And when you think that in a population of 30 million, 1.5 million were lost, in addition to the effect on the lives of all the widows, all the orphans. So I wanted to find a family that I could focus on who were party to separations, journeys, migrating almost from one place to another in search of safety. And I just feel as though that the dysfunction and the political violence and the lack of dialogue between one side and another really, you know, puts us in mind of the kind of atmosphere of the Civil War. And while it's really about a book. It's a book about love, really, between
sure.
these characters who are so connected to each other that they're able to continue to resist and survive despite what's gone on around them.
This amazing 12-year-old girl who really is the adult in the room, and she has a mute mother. There is a man there that she has been told to call Papa. Is that girl who you started with initially?
She was. I always seem to start with a voice as opposed to having an idea or a plan. And Connolly's voice in that first part of the book really, I think, sustained me throughout the whole novel. There are many other speakers, but they're all third person, sort of
right.
very close third person point of view. But Connolly's voice, she's the perfect narrator because she's a bit of an outlaw in that she doesn't know the context of what she's seeing. And in fact, she's been kept very isolated all her life. She's never gone to school. There are reasons that the family settled on these high ridges in West Virginia, and they have not told her about their past.
She is a much loved only child in this family, and it's interesting to see in those mountains and in that region of the strength that she has. As you say, she is the one person who speaks may not be the most reliable of narrators, but has such strength and knowledge.
Yes, partly because from a very young age, she's been treated almost as an adult. Well, I don't want to do any spoilers, but she really, from the time her mother begins to fail in response to what's happening to her, Connelly really picks up the slack, and that has to do with not only mothering these babies, but trying to act as a buffer between her mother and the character called Papa.
The state hospital that you mentioned, the Trans Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, begins in 1858. Talk to us a little bit about the research of that place and how it plays such a role in this story.
Well, I was fascinated by the idea of, you know, the post-war years were just apocalyptic, really, for many, many people. Resources were really scarce. Everything was just felt unsteady. And I love the idea of the asylum, which most people think of as an imprisonment or an isolation that could be horrible, as a refuge, you know, in times like that. And for a time when Thomas Sawyer Kirkbride was so influential in around for about 50, 60 years before and after the war. He wrote a book in 1852 called On the Construction, Maintenance, and Industry of an Asylum. And every state followed his specifications completely. They were about how to deal with fire, preventing fire, how people should be spaced. These places, especially the asylum that we're reading about, is a hand-cut limestone building, larger than any other limestone building except the Kremlin.
Wow.
And I was fascinated by the world they tried to control for their patients. This was before psychiatric drugs, and it was part of what Kirkbride called moral treatment, to treat the insane morally, regardless of whether they were incurable or not. And he did this by assigning every person their own room with two windows and a transom, because part of it was about fresh, clean air, and assigning each one a regimen that might include a walk of 4 or 5 miles a day was usual. And the institution was completely self-supporting. They had their own dairies. They had their own gardens. They had a full staff of cooks and maids. And it must have seemed so safe to Connelly and her mother when they arrived there. The asylum in West Virginia is now owned by a private individual, and it's a nonprofit, and they have refurbished the main building to look as though it's about 1880, whereas the rest of these huge buildings are in ruins. And they, you know, there are tours through both parts of the building. And a couple of photographs that I took and a number of historical documents having to do with the institution are included in Night Watch. It was really interesting to think that this room that I photographed was going to be their room, you know, in my mind, in the book.
What was it in writing about as you say, the moral treatment, and I know Kirkbride had was a Quaker, so there seemed to be a an understanding and a and a kindness that is often missing from an institution setting.
Exactly. And he was also flying in the face of the war itself and right. what it had done. And he was imported from Pennsylvania, a more northern state. And he was very sensitive to the fact that it takes time to heal, that he was in a southern town, so to speak. In fact, the director of the Western State Hospital, or the Trans-Allegheny Institute was at that time, was jailed for most of the war because he was a southern sympathizer. So they're all treading ground that is shifting beneath them, but there is this island inside the institution in which Eliza Connolly's mother begins to heal. And all the way through the book, there just is a kind of layering of revealed secrets that it sort of comes together like a puzzle.
You mentioned earlier about this, of you seeing Night Watch as a third in a trilogy of also writing about Vietnam and Korea. Is there a sense that a look of really an empathic look at history and how it has impacted us and can impact us and can continue to impact us?
It certainly is about that. I want to pull readers into a kind of time travel. I mean, right. I think literature really offers that to us, for us to imagine ourselves living through such a time. Love keeps going no matter what happens to us. But I'm always interested in looking at what happens to the person who did not make the decision to go to war, and the way that societies are kind of decimated by the inability to compromise. I mean, I think of some wars as wars. I think we all think of some wars as wars that had to be fought.
Right.
But it's that I'm hoping that in the future we never see that kind of situation again. And I think by reminding people in a kind of empathic way with these characters and their lives, that they begin to seem so real, you know, as you're reading the book. And I was also really interested in writing about the 19th century in a convincing way, the way the characters talk and the way that they approach things and the incredible resourcefulness in terms of the natural world, which at that time was totally natural. The woodscraft and the gardening and all of that was really fascinating to me and kind of beautiful.
The novel is beautiful, and it's just such a pleasure to read. It is Night Watch. It is published by Knopf. Jane Ann Phillips, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for the beautiful work and for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you so much. I was happy to be here.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, Jane Ann Phillips' latest novel is Night Watch. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.